Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this is our episode, Cues of the Force. For the last several episodes, I've claimed that Cues stands for something other than questions. It's a fun joke, but perhaps it's time to evolve. Is it time to evolve, or Ken, or am I just being too lazy to come up with another Q word? What do you think?
No, I love that it's a struggle every week, and that it's, meaning like it's hard for you and I both to say cues and not feel like we're a little on hip trying to be hip. I don't know. Cues, man. Like
cues, you know, yeah. Like the kids do. The kids are doing all the cues these days.
Yeah.
Anyway, really, it's called Cues of the Force because it used to be News and Cues, one show grouped together. And Cues of the Force saves a lot of room when we are typing it up on social media. That's the real reason these days. Anyway, happy to be here. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Cat Napsock. I've got A's for the Q's. That's my line to say every week. It's a catchphrase Thursday here at Force Center.
That's right. Ken has absinthe for the Q's. That's it. We'll start making up what the A's mean. Anyway, as always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Do you have an ancient device like Nemic from Andor that you can make play an audiobook? Well, then you can listen there. We are continuing to recommend Padawan by Kirsten White in Obi-Wan Kenobi, a young Obi-Wan Kenobi adventure. that I really look forward to reading past the first chapter. If you want to listen to the whole book, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. All right, we are going to get into our cues. We have two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we go first to Twitter and our old friend Yuval Aisler. Here is what Yuval has to say. Silly, but also kind of serious question. Do you think the Jedi got confused which clone is which? In the Clone Wars series, Yoda said each of them is unique in the Force, but I can't imagine that it wasn't confusing for them or even the clones themselves. This is a great question because obviously there's so much in the Clone Wars about the individuality, the uniqueness. They're absolute unique individuals, the clones, but their purpose is to be soldiers, right? Rank and file. So how do you think about this one, Ken? Do you think this is more of a silly question, a serious question, both? Where do you go?
I think it's both, but you might feel, and maybe you've all feeling this, of like, you don't want to be insulting by saying silly questions, because I think we're all invested in the identity and the journeys of the clones, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure a little mistaken identity. Who knows? Maybe there's a sitcom-like hijinks episode where two clones just exchange places to have some fun at the office. I don't know. But I think the interesting thing behind it is it could be a litmus test for certain Jedi, right? You know, Pong Krell, he didn't give a damn about what they were. He knew your number and that's about it. And so not to equate a Jedi to Perrin, Mon Mothma's husband, in Andor, but him not knowing the driver, right? Him not paying attention to someone he might view as beneath him. Not that a Jedi would think the clones are beneath him, but maybe there are some Jedi who are like, hey, we're in this war. I'm a general and they are tools. And maybe that's part of the journey. That's how you might know a little inner workings of a Jedi. And then you got the flip side with someone like Yoda going, you're all unique. Anakin really connecting. I think Kenobi does as well, but Anakin's got a special boots on the ground. These are my brothers and sisters in arms type of vibe. So that's one way to look at it. Ahsoka as well, the connection, but also the journey for the clones, right? Like they come out of the tubes, so to speak, and they do look alike. And they are probably feeling this big concept of we are weapons in this war. And as they start to discover that dance, as Rex says, and was it season 7 Clone Wars? Like, we have a weird relationship with the war, paraphrasing, of course. The war is why we exist, but what are we beyond that as soldiers? So maybe that drives them. Maybe there were some mistaken identities, and along the way, someone's like, I don't know. I'm going to get a tattoo because this is who I am. My nickname represents this. To see and track how that organically grows, I think it's a very important question. And I think some Jedi did, to answer the question directly, I think some Jedi did get confused early on.
I think as well. I think there could absolutely be some mistaken identity, some rude moments from Jedi who think they know who a clone is, but use the wrong name. I think there's definitely some clone hijinks. They have that in them. We see young Boba Fett use his appearance to infiltrate the ranks of the clones and the Jedi to try to get revenge on Mace Windu for the murder of his father. I know, strong language that I use, murder. I'll say death. I don't want to start any Mace Django controversies when we're not directly addressing that question. So I think that's definitely a possibility. I think this is speaking to something that's kind of deep and true, I think, which is why it's so great that you've all kind of said this is silly but serious, right? Because you understand the comedy of it. They are designed to be identical. So there's that like, oh, I'm so ashamed. I mistook your identity.
Yes.
Also, you've been designed
so
that people can mistake your identity, you know?
Yeah.
I think the really interesting thing to me about the clones is that, you know, as an idea of a part of Palpatine's whole manipulation, the one side is going to have the droids and the other side is going to have the clones, and the way the clones are presented to us at the end of Attack of the Clones, it's a defeat. It is this image of rigid similarity and militarism, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the clones taking on identity, right? Giving themselves nicknames and painting their armor and even getting tattoos and different hairstyles. That doesn't seem to be like in defiance of something. It seems to happen organically.
Yeah.
Because the clones we meet on Kamino who are in still training are talking about growing up, talking about coming of age, of, you know, am I going to make it through these trials? How do I feel about the clones that I was partnered with? The names just seem to happen because in the galaxy of Star Wars, you know, organic rules the day, right? Organic wins. And I like that it isn't like totally in defiance. It's not like some Pong Krell Jedi came along and then a bunch of clones started a revolution. It starts from their earliest days that they have individuality, because it's just, it's true and it's natural. And of course they would.
Yeah. Yeah. The organic, I was going to say an organic uprising. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but I go with it there. It sounds like a grocery store chain slogan. It's an organic uprising of fruits and veggies. But yeah, no, I really like that idea too. Yeah. Yeah. Could have, you know, Pong Krell, some of the others could have, been there, but I like that. Yeah. You're just standing around, especially during the younger days. Yeah. You forget, even though they have an accelerated growth rate, even if it was 1 week, that's 1 week of your youth sitting around and just getting to know each other. And the fact that it's truly them as clones that are the ones who are like, hey, you're you, and I know you, and you're me, or I'm me. And from there, the tats, the armor, everything kind of emerges. It's just something that I didn't think a lot of back, say, definitely 2002 and 5, but even with the Clone Wars series. But the Clone Wars series was thinking about that. Absolutely. Absolutely takes that deep dive into the identities of them.
Yeah, one of the biggest points. And yeah, just to answer Yuval's question directly, I think you nailed it. I think the different Jedi have entirely different levels of relationships with their clones. Yeah. I think as a practical matter, probably all of the Jedi generals know their immediate clone commanders and captains' names, insignia, can pick them, you know, out of a crowd based on behavior and all that. You know, I think Obi-Wan goes a little bit deeper with his relationship with Cody. Certainly Ahsoka and Anakin. Yeah, I love his story of like, yeah, no, I relate to them and I kind of want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
I like the clones better than my fellow Jedi, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. Thinks Anakin Skywalker. But then, you know, you've got the Jedi who are of their time, who are a little bit more rigid, right? Like Luminara Unduli or maybe Mace Windu, who maybe don't take the time to get to know all of their clones in such great detail. So I think that there is definitely a level of difference between the Jedi.
Yeah, and I'm not super familiar with some of the now Legends content, the Clone Commander books and all that kind of stuff. And then maybe there's some exploration of that, too. So I want to just acknowledge it. And if you're out there screaming at your podcast machine, yeah, I'm definitely not familiar with it, but I'm sure it was explored. It's something that's fascinating. Again, it's something I experienced in 02 that clones emerge, and by 05, yeah, we know some of them, and I'm hearing about the 501st, Vader, all this kind of like, but like I didn't stop to think of it. They were kind of action figures to me, and so I love that the series itself, like I said, comes along and answers it, because it's really intriguing. Some of the most powerful stuff in that Clone Wars series is these clones trying to figure out who they are or continuing to express who they know they are.
Yeah, and I love that perspective is given to the audience immediately from meeting Rex in the Clone Wars film. The first broadcast episode, Ambush, is the one that Yuval is referencing, where Yoda, some of the clones in that are not quite ready to lean into their individuality. And it's Yoda who reassures them, like, you're not cannon fodder. I can see you in the Force. You're all different and unique in the Force. Which leads me to my last thought on this one, Ken. I think there's something about this question that's powerful, because it's this weird feeling when you have the intention of respect, but you forget someone's name or you forget where you met them, right? And the last thing you want to do is disrespect them, but you honestly forgot or made an honest mistake, right? Mm-hmm. How great would it be able to just reach into the Force? And you're like, you're talking to someone you know mostly from social media and like, yeah, no, right. You're Seal Pirate 5. I remember your Twitter name. I forgot your human name. I'm just going to reach into the Force and remember your human name.
I love that. I actually experienced that this past weekend when I was doing the comedy in La Jolla. There was, they have the door folks and they'll either, you know, they'll start the show, they'll alternate. So five shows, five different comics will go up to start the show and do 5 minutes and get the rules out. And two of them, two gentlemen with long hair and mustaches, youngsters in their 20s there, looked pretty much the same. And on the Sunday night show, one of them walks in, he goes, all right, I'm going to go start the show. And I went, all right, go get him, Connor. And he's like, I'm Christian. I was like, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Damn it. So I felt like not quite Pong Krell, but I could have been if I chose incorrect.
I understand. Anakin Skywalker would never forget his opening comedian's names.
Never.
Yeah. So great question. Very fun to think through. We're moving on unless you have any other thoughts or comedy clone memories.
No, great question. Not silly at all. Loved it.
Not silly at all. We go to Flalilis Skywalker. Flalilis says, since Boba Fett and Cad Bane came back, is there any other bounty hunter you would like to see returning in post-Return of the Jedi stories? This is a great question. There's been lots of bounty hunters bopping around in books and comics, but Boba Fett and Cad Bane, to this great question, got to come back in live action on our screens. So I think we can take this this question to mean on screen, or we can take it to mean in the books, in the comics. Where do you go, Ken? Are there any bounty hunters you are hungering to see?
Well, yeah, I took this as absolute no disrespect to comics or books, but I took it as, you know, the spotlight, live action, like right. Cad Bane had the day in the sun type of moment here. So on that note, I mean, I've gotten some of those already, right? Cad Bane would have been on my list, and definitely Black Kersantan. And I got to experience that in a major way in the Book of Boba Fett, one of my favorite things about that series. So I actually struggled with this a little bit because also I know with War of the Bounty Hunters, there were some fates that maybe I'm not entirely remembering. So I'd love to answer like a four LOM or a four LOM if that's how you choose to say it. But here's what I went with right now. In canon, I'm unsure of their fate, so I apologize if they've already been removed from the playing board. But we got IG-11, so why not IG-88? We had a little bit of a hint in the rivalry between them. It was acknowledged in some of the descriptions going into Mando season one. It doesn't factor in the show, but I would love to see that.
Would you? I mean, obviously, IG-11 has a unique voice and a unique mm-hmm. journey. How would you want IG-88 to be portrayed or differentiated on screen?
Because IG-11 starts from the starting point, you know, very rules and regulations, so to speak, which was part of the programming thing there. I wouldn't mind it being somewhat similar and not opposites at war, but like they're both like I've had some friends. In my past who I've been in the middle and they don't really like each other, but I'm always like, it's because you're the same and you see each other, you see your faults in the other person. And maybe that's what's going on here. My old job, I had two particular friends that it was always every day, like I hate so-and-so. Well, they hate you too because you're them. so I think maybe that would be, what I'd want to see. IG-88's kind of like, no, I follow the regulations better.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I always love the idea, you know, and I know there's a lot of IG-88 legend storytelling, yeah, but I really like the idea that IG-88 is very rogue, very militant, very, mm-hmm. you know, sure of their droid self. So I would love to see IG-88. And the great thing with droids is like, hey, if IG-88 was destroyed in some way, IG-88 can probably be put back together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I would love to see in live action, there's a bunch of different bounty hunters I would love to see in live action, but I kind of want to see them the way that we got to see Cad Bane in Black Kersantan, mm-hmm. where they weren't in the background. They weren't just, we need a bounty hunter to slot in here. Like, they had real perspective, right? They were tied to the story and the themes. And I think I would like that so the bounty hunters don't kind of get painted with the cheap cameo brush, you know, like there's meat to their story. So with that in mind, this character has been featured heavily in books, comic books, video games, but I want a live action, just great return to the spotlight, and that is Bosk. Bosk's always been one of my favorites going back to my action figure days. My brother had Boba Fett and I had Bosk. I love the growl to Piet. And the character's been developed in really fun ways in the Clone Wars too. And we know that Bosk is around a little bit from the Aftermath books. I would love to see Bosk in live action. And some of the things that's been developed for the character in the Clone Wars and in books, the From a Certain Point of View story in The Empire Strikes Back, Bosk is one of my very, very favorite. So I'd love to see Bosk in like a substantive role in The Mandalorian, or if we were lucky enough to get a Solo, a Lando, Akira, you know, limited series, I would love to have Bosk be a player.
I love that idea. Definitely. Mando's made that probably more possible than in the older days there. It's fun. I've always loved that you love Boss because I think I always overlooked Bosk. I don't know why. I think, and I love lizards. Like I've had a lot of pet lizards. So maybe it's just, I feel Bosk wouldn't, you know, just live quietly in a aquarium I set up for.
Bosk is not quiet. Yeah, yelling in the Battlefront game, breathe death. That's not quiet. There's just something about the character that's like clearly competent, clearly dangerous, but almost always not winning the day. Because they're like too violent, too stubborn, not thinking through things. So I'd love to see Bosk. I'd also, of course, love to see in live action one of my very favorite bounty hunters from the Clone Wars, also in Aftermath, Embo. The Kyozo. I think Embo would be challenging to realize really well in live action. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to do a deep dive. There's some things with Embo's character of like, clearly he's involved in some jobs he's taking the money for some kidnapping, some murdering. But there is also some possible nobility to the character. So I think there'd be room to kind of explore. Is he one of these bounty hunters who has a change of heart as he gets older?
I like that idea. Would you be up following Dengar decades after Return of the Jedi when he's starting to become Rothgar Deng?
Absolutely. Yeah. If anybody's not on top of this, Google Rothgar Deng, a great image from Rise of Skywalker of just this. I believe it's in the visual dictionary where it is confirmed that that's probably a bounty hunter we know who kept making some modifications and have gone a little too far.
I'd love that there. One bounty, could not be post Return of the Jedi. I am definitely up for more Aura Singh content. Love her turns in Clone Wars, played a voice by Jamie King, right, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. Excellent character, intriguing, a lot of fans. And then you get her fate revealed in Solo. Like, I'm up for that. Whether it's live action or animated, you know, if it's easier to do that. I have this idea in my head. Yeah, I know Make Solo 2 is a great idea. Han Solo, a series. I would love, you know, the adventures of Val and Tobias Beckett leading up to the Solo stuff and have that series and then have that fate revealed and just get Aura Singh back in live action where she began, of course, in Phantom Menace would be interesting for me as well.
Yeah, I pushed her. It was the fall that killed her. Pretty sure it was the fall that killed her. It's a great line. She is a fascinating bounty hunter because we have played with all these characters who go through growth or some amount of ambiguity, or I do it, you know, it's a job and I do the job. She's vicious.
Yeah.
Right. There is fun in having a character of like, hey, so you want a bounty hunter who's just totally out for themselves. Absolutely vicious. The character has been well crafted in the Clone Wars to be that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't believe we're going to be getting a Book of Boba Fett season 2. But if you were and you want to have some more flashbacks to points of his life, live action younger Boba with Aura Singh and some of the lessons she was imparting on him and what he feels about them now, it could be interesting.
Yes, some bad parenting. Boba Fett's bad parenting. I'd watch it. I don't know if other people would be excited. My final is a bounty hunter that was also introduced in the Clone Wars and features in Aftermath is Sugi. The Zabrak bounty hunter. She was very much like, hey, we're not all, you know, monsters. That's like her whole sort of banter in perspective with Obi-Wan and fights kind of in a noble way against Hondo, victimizing those poor Felucian farmers.
That's right. That's good.
To be great to see. All right. We could spend literally hours listing bounty hunters we would like to see, because to be perfectly honest, it's almost all of them. As long as they are handled well and given their own story and really have a reason to be in the story, show me all your bounty hunters, Star Wars. That's what I say. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, I agree. Show me Dengar. Yeah.
In the transition to Rothgar Deng, a 2-hour horror film. That would be great. And on that note, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more cues.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back to A Some More Cues of the Force. We go to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. This comes to us from Social Tortoise, a great name. Social Tortoise says, "Hey, my question is, what were your binary sunset moments? What I mean is, what was a time when you were growing up that you just felt so pulled to something greater? They don't even need to seem dramatic. After all, Luke had probably stared at those twin suns thousands of times, so he probably was bored with the sight of them as he was daydreaming of his first steps. I'm honestly still thinking of mine, but I will get back to it ASAP." After we share ours, I'll check back in on our Patreon post and see if Social Tortoise has shared their binary sunset moments. Ken, I've had a few of these in my life, some that I was kind of cognizant in the moment of like, hey, I'm having a binary sunset moment.
Yeah,
and some that it occurred to me later. So do you have a list in your head? Do you have your binary sunset moments, or is this something you had to rack your brain for?
No, I do. And it's funny you mention it. It's like, I don't think necessarily in that moment, I was like, oh, it's just like Luke and A New Hope. But I also was aware that it was, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Music's very important in my life. So some of the moments have music in them. And and one of them, I do remember talking about this in Force Center before. We've been broadcasting for 8 years. Sometimes, like uncles at a party, we'll repeat the same stories over and over. It's just going to happen. But one of them starts, I graduated high school in 1994, June of 94. And I very distinct memory of getting after the graduation ceremony, driving home, going to go out to some parties and celebrate. But I was with my friend who has sadly since passed away, the friend I saw Phantom Menace with, actually, in 99. Mm-hmm. And we got my Fairmont, which you and I both share the joy of our first cars being early 80s Ford Fairmonts. Mm-hmm. Mine I'd named the Millennium Fairmont because that's the life I led. And the Beatles, Baby, You're a Rich Man playing and the lyrics, you know, now that you know who you are, what are you going to be? And just driving and the sun starting to set over the central coast of California. I graduated Royal Grande High School. There's this city, they call it the Five Cities. So they're all connected, but the city called Napomo and the sun, the beaches behind it. And the sun was going down. I just remember feeling I am stepping out in the world and I can't wait to step on out. And again, it was one of those, I was like, I wasn't like, hey, I'm just like Luke turning to my friend. It absolutely felt that. And that's the power of the Twin Suns moment. And you're right. It's a stretch of road, Social Tortoise, that I drove every day, including during this time of day. But because of the graduation, because of the song playing the moment, I absolutely felt, and I was excited, but like Luke going, I don't know how to get there. I don't know if I belong out there. I don't know. And I don't know what's going to happen. Crazy coming up on almost 30 years later. But it definitely is the start of my list.
Yeah, I have a not anywhere near as visually beautiful as yours, but I think that moment is so relatable because I think so many people feel that way early, you know, in their life, late teens, early 20s. I know I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but my bedroom at my parents' home in North Minneapolis, it was in the back of the house and it had a door to this just tiny little balcony that had been added way after the house was built, and the balcony wasn't safe to stand on. So I had this like whole door with a screen door that I could open to the outside, particularly in the summer. But I couldn't even step out on the balcony. That was how trapped I felt. I literally can't take my first step into the larger world because I will maybe fall through and, you know, crack my head open on the fridge, which was what was under it on the first floor. But I would stay up, you know, really late, and this is in, you know, my late teens, stay up really late, working on like, listening to records and working on paintings. I had set up, a showing in a, just a small coffee shop. That was like I'm going to take a step out into the world. I'm going to make paintings that are actually going to hang up somewhere and people are going to see them. And like that pushing to try to be a part of the world and to see, you know, how the world is going to respond to you. And I was so eager and so wanted to, you know, get out of there. And I remember many nights at like about 2 a.m. It just like there's next to no sounds, maybe a siren far away, just high enough to kind of see over the treetops and just staring out at the world and wanting to go be a part of it and wondering what all was out there and realizing that, oh, this is like Luke.
Yeah.
That's why I like that moment so much. I'm Luke Skywalker and, you know, followed up with like, I don't want stormtroopers to come to my house, but I want to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's why we keep coming back to the series every week. There's a lot of lessons to take from it, but without a doubt, I contend that Twin Suns moment is the reason it struck a chord in a generation in 77 and continued to do it over and over again.
It's a whole different movie if you don't just have that moment of poetry, right? That just makes you feel all those things. It's so powerful. It sounds like you have some more binary sunset moments throughout your life.
Yeah, I wanted to run through because the one graduating high school is kind of positive, right? I was always kind of a bittersweet, somber kid, you know, a little bit of in my feelings all the time. So that one, but it was hopeful. But I've had the other moments that were big changes in life. Right after high school, I got into my radio career. I worked at this radio station, Caber 95, my hometown. And I'd lost my spot on the morning show, got laid off. But I decided to stick on. They offered me to move to the overnight shift. And this was like 97 into 98. And I knew a change needed to happen. And that feeling from, oh, I want to be part of a larger world. Well, here I'm in my hometown. I had a radio career, but like this wasn't necessarily where I wanted to be right now. And it was like 3 in the morning-ish. Our station had big windows. You could pull back the curtains and look out into the town. And my town, very small town, looked out on Grand Avenue, which every town has, right? Grand Avenue. We had an Elm Street, which is why those movies scared me. And it was like 3 in the morning. I don't remember the song playing, whatever rock was playing. I just remember staring out, and it was the opposite of Twin Suns. It was like one moon. It was just the coldness of the town and me feeling like, I want out, but this is the part of that Twin Suns scene. And it's, I always say it's like a three part, you know, song there. And the middle part is, is Luke doesn't feel like he can leave. He feels like he's stuck. And that's what I felt there. And that drove me to make some changes. And then not with stormtroopers coming to take out my family or an old space wizard, but I lost my job completely like a month later. Woke up, was going to LA to see an Oasis concert, got a call from my general manager saying, sorry, we're laying you all off. And a lot of fear with that. This is January 1998. And so August of 98, I do move to LA, 22, and driving over the 118 freeway at Rocky Peak, which is about 5 minutes from where a Tython is. And that landscape, so familiar with that episode of The Mandalorian there, that is right off the 118 freeway. And so the other side of that is this area called Rocky Peak. And driving over, I think my parents were trailing me with my suitcases and stuff. I'm moving to LA and I'm in my Plymouth Colt. Fairmont had passed on at this point. And again, that feeling of coming over the 118 freeway at that point is kind of high in the hills over this peak. And you look down into the San Fernando Valley. And you can kind of see in the distance the hill that Hollywood is on the other side of. And here it is. I'm making that big move. And I had that feeling. This is the world out there. I do not know who is out there for me. I don't know what is out there for me, but I have taken that step into a larger world. And then the tag on that is, 17 years later, I get stuck in a day job. I had a lot of wonderful experiences in the business, comedy, working at the Groundlings with great folks like Mikey Day and Kristen Wiig and doing all those kind of wonderful, fun things. But I still wasn't what I wanted to do. My late 30s just felt that a lot of it was slipping away. And I take the big leap to go work for Screen Junkies and everything. And one of the first things we do is go to New York. And I never traveled to New York. And I always wanted to travel to New York. Again, a wretched hive of scum and villainy. I wanted to be there. And finally, one of my first duties after getting hired as a producer there is we went to New York Comic Con. It was my first trip to New York. And me and Dan Murrow walked around the city and a lot of fun. And we flew out. And I just remember it's like the reverse. I just started this job. I was like 39, new lease on life, and flying out over New York, and the sun is setting, and I got some music playing in my ear, and it felt like the twin suns again. And that's, I think, part of it too, is even you go to Luke in Last Jedi, Luke on Octo. He's already had one twin suns moment, and we know the one that kind of ends his life, but I think there's another point. Where he probably looks at it again and goes, I got to step back out here, or I get a chance to do it again after all the lessons and all the failures, and I can kind of rediscover who I am. That was me in 2015, having a new Twin Suns moment. So we all can have that.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. You and I think maybe in similar points of reflection, but the other moments I thought of were kind of similar points along the journey for me. Once I had kind of been in college for a while, been doing some visual art and been doing some writing, kind of fell into doing comedy and sketch comedy and writing things with some friends, but with my brother in particular, and really deciding like, oh, that's the thing that speaks to me the most, this immediacy of being in front of an audience. And, after, growing up with lots of the stereotypes of people our age of being picked on for being skinny, for being nerdy, all those things, to kind of feel like this is a way to step into myself, to be on a stage and just, be loud and proud and confident. And I so wanted to make a career of it. And there is a weird theater in Minneapolis that is still there. I'm sure I've mentioned it on the show, called Bryant Lake Bowl. It is a restaurant, a bowling alley, a bar, and a theater all in one. And it had already been there for a long time by the time this was happening. Some people recognize it because there was this amazing drone footage that came out a couple of years where it swooped through this restaurant and this bowling alley, and it followed one of the balls. That's Bryant Lake Bowl. You can Google it, and you can take a drone flight through it. Doesn't quite go into the theater. It just buzzes by it. Anyway, been doing comedy and theater for maybe 2 years and had tried to apply to get into the Bryant Lake Bowl. And it was in at the time to me, like the cool neighborhood. It was the place to be. And I'd been turned down a couple of times. And then finally somebody said yes to a show and we had our tech rehearsal, and I got there really early. I got there earlier than even the techs. So I ended up on this stage by myself and like just walked onto the stage that I've been sort of coveting for 2 years. Yeah. And it was like inside and on a stage, but it was much like you're talking about of that moment where like, okay, this is that step beyond what Luke has, that sunset moment where you've taken literally your first step and now you're beginning the adventure. And I remember just like that, this moment just sinking in. It wasn't just like, great, I did it. It was just, it had this moment of like, I'm going to remember this, you know, because this is significant. And I went on to perform at that theater again and again and again, many, many times, many different shows over the years, many adventures with friends, family, people I was dating. Yeah. It became a big part of my life. So I always kind of treasure that I had that twin sons moment at the beginning of that adventure, marking that this is going to be an important place in my life. This is going to be an important part of my life. And it was.
And it was. Love that.
Yeah. And then final one, which I'll make quick because we were having a lot of fun on our sunset moments. I'm really glad that you shared your screen junkies story. These are scary moments as well, that you shared your screen junkies moments, because I think it's so important to real life into the story of Star Wars that we are almost always coming of age. And my wife and I last year went to Sequoia National Park, and we took this hike up to this place called Sunset Rock. And it was in some ways the most Star Wars experience I've ever had, because we just had it on a map that, oh, there's a good viewpoint where you can kind of look over the park. And it kept being like little breaks in the trail. I'm like, is that it? And then we passed some people coming down. We're like, are we at Sunset Rock yet? And they're like, no. You will know when you're at Sunset Rock, because we just thought it was like, it's a path. There's a break in the trees. There's a rock with a face on it or whatever. Yeah. Turns out we open this clearing and it is massive exposed boulders that you walk on, like, you know, 6 or 7, like just huge, to the point where you step out on them. And it is the closest I've ever been to feeling like I'm stepping on alien terrain. Like this is a planet made of rocks. Wow. So, you know, my wife and I spent some time up there, and, you know, we took pictures. There was a stick that people had been drawing things in the sand. So I tried to draw some meaningful things in the sand. And I just really remember we were both like, well, we should head down as the sun was just starting to set on Sunset Rock. And I had like a real twin sunsets moment of like kind of just staring out and thinking like, there is so much life out there. There is so much still to experience. And I had a like sort of like, I'm not done. twin sunset moment of there's a lot in our culture. I think it's changing. I hope it's changing. But that like life is to be lived in your 20s and 30s and then just sort of pined for. for the rest of your life. There can be a lot of ageism where like, you're done, you know?
Yeah.
And I had this moment of just sort of joyful defiance of, I'm not done. There's still lots I want to do. There's still lots I want to explore, and damn it, I'm going to.
There you go. Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. No, and look, this is why I can say it again, but this is why, you know, I sometimes even get a little grumpy. People are like, well, this and that. Like, Force Center is not a review channel. We discuss Star Wars and we take it and put it into our hearts and our lives, because that's why we keep coming back. And so anyone out there listening, what are your twin sons moments? Reflect on them, find them, and you'll even become more connected to that little farm boy on Tatooine.
Yeah, exactly. And then that Jedi Master staring off to the next adventure at the end of The Last Jedi. Such a beautiful moment. Love hearing these stories. And yeah, if you want to share yours, we always love hearing how Star Wars affects everybody. So yeah, please, Social Tortoise, share your adventures when you think of yours, your sunset, binary sunset moments. All right, we're on to our final question. This comes to us from Brian Babcock. Brian has a main question and a bonus question. So we'll go first to Brian's main question. Brian says, hello, Joseph and Ken. We know that Palpatine's plan to wipe out the Jedi and overthrow the Republic more or less proceeded as he had foreseen. Insert evil cackle. My question is, given that old Palpy was a master at strategy and planning and had backup plans for the backup plans of the backup plans, do you think there's any chance that if the Separatists were winning the war, Palpatine would have used them to become the new power of the galaxy. Say if the battle droids were more effective or the clones were less effective and the Seps were winning most of the battles, would Palpatine have altered his plans to have the Separatists take over the Republic and the battle droids overwhelm and eliminate the Jedi? If so, would he let Dooku be Chancellor while Sheev ruled from the shadows? Or would he find a way to slither his way into being the Emperor of the new Separatist government and have Dooku taken out? Or, no matter what the scenario, were the Separatists, Grievous, and Dooku always doomed to lose even if they won? Obviously, this is more of a what-if scenario, but I thought it would be fun to speculate on. This is a very fun to think about of exactly what Palpatine's plan is. Did he have plan A? Did he have plan B? Was plan B unacceptable? Let's find out. What are your thoughts, Ken?
I love trying to get into the mind of Sheev, which is scary to think about and maybe scary to do. So I'm trying to start the simplest answer I have for some of it, which is, all right, if the Separatists win, I don't think Dooku gets any promotion because that's all Sheev's. The glory be to Sheev has got to be part of all his plans. I think he absolutely has a bunch of plans, definitely has some different playbooks. All roads lead to his ego. All roads lead to his power. And I think there was something that he would need to be in the front. And I don't know if that was, you know, was that any kind of agreement on Dooku's side? Like, hey, if Separatists win, you get a certain spot or I move out of you. I don't know. But that's where I start with him. But there's something I like about the Separatists just were never going to win. And that was part of it. Where I go, Joseph, is what's easier to sell at the end of it? Mm-hmm. Again, you're out there in the field. You can't necessarily control the battles. Grievous and Dooku seem to be playing to win, playing for keeps. But what's the easier message to sell? Is it the fear of the great other to the Republic? And we've ended that threat and you don't want that fear to be realized again. So let me get you this safe and secure society. Is that the easier message to sell? Or, hey, Separatists take over and I will always guide you forward to, an honest and true society. I don't know. I don't know what's easier. You know what I mean mm-hmm. with that? That's why I think it might have been engineered a little bit, all roads leading to the Republic winning.
Yeah, that's my big answer is I think the ideology of the win matters. Exactly as you're saying, and I want to put a pin in that for a second because there's so much other fun things. I think if you look at the evidence of like the actual Clone Wars animated series, I think there's phases of the war where he's like, great, we got it going. All the chaos and all the violence benefits me. And sometimes like, hey, yeah, I send my Republic troops out and I kind of like them to win. Yeah, the Separatists won. What are you going to do? Fine. Because right now my main goal is to just get everybody absolutely in a tizzy. And hey, if something comes up like, ooh, I didn't know about that Zilla Beast. I would like that. Then suddenly Palpatine has like a specific subquest within his big plan of chaos and violence. But I think the Separatists were always doomed to lose. I think Dooku was always doomed to be replaced. Maybe if Dooku defeated Anakin, maybe Palpatine would be like, well, damn, I was wrong.
Yeah, maybe.
Keep Dooku around until while he's still valuable. I think Grievous might have been spared because I think Grievous was a blunt tool who was easily manipulated, right? Yeah. Grievous was never going to be a threat to Palpatine. I think the Separatists in terms of the corporations, like the Trade Federation and the Corporate Alliance and Wat Tambor and all those people, I think they were always doomed because I think Palpatine sold them the lie of like, I'm going to free you from all this red tape where the Republic is trying to contain what you can do as a corporation. And really, he was going to be, I'm going to nationalize the corporations. I'm galaxy eyes, however they say it. I will be taking over your corporations. So those people were always screwed. Then I think the political idealists, to quote Ki-Adi Mundi, the people like Mina Bonteri, who are like, the Republic is actually failing. It's caught up in red tape. Look at what happened on Naboo and it was only because Amidala acted that they were freed. Otherwise, they would have been subjugated. The Republic's failing. And those sincere, valid concerns were manipulated. Those people were also always doomed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mina Bonteri, first and foremost.
Yeah, and I think that's, to me, the most compelling sort of evidence from the Clone Wars animated series is we can see Sidious step in when the Separatists were in a risk of having some sort of success in a way that he did not want to, right? Want mm-hmm. them to, right? Mm-hmm. When Asajj Ventress is getting too powerful, Sidious is like, take her out, Dooku.
Correct.
When Mina Bonteri and Padme almost succeed in opening up peace talks, she's got to go, right?
Yep.
So I think the Separatists to him were always a tool. And I think it is about he himself wanting the power, not just as a figurehead, but to be the power. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, I think it is so about the ideology that is created by the Republic winning. Mm-hmm. The Separatists are the proof that there are scary outsiders, unwanted others. The Jedi rebelled, too. There might be threats to our society lurking within our society. Mm-hmm. And in order to stop them, you need a strong, militant government. And these others, these scary outsiders that might be lurking within us, not only do they require order and like literal vigilance of the Empire watching over you, but we know that they're so awful, they're so violent, that any violence the Empire does is, of course, justified because mm-hmm. Those dangerous others lurking within are so awful. So anything that we do is justified. And then to top it all off, we need a strong leader who is not going to get caught up in red tape and is willing to do what is needed to save you. I think it's one of the big points that Lucas is making. This mm-hmm. is an ideology of fear and control that we see happen in the real world. And I think what you were saying, Ken, is he gets an ideology he does not want if the Separatists win, right?
Yeah.
If the Separatists win and the figures, Mina Bonteri had survived and said, like, great, we didn't want to fight this war, but now that we have, we're going to create a society that's better because our victory means the Republic was broken. There was too much red tape. We didn't work together. We didn't respect one of, some planet's independence as much as we should. So now let's do that. Let's have a government of hard work and hope. That is the last thing Sidious wants, right? Let's have a government where there are more people at the table. Sidious does not want that government. He wants a government of fear and control, not hope and hard work.
Yeah, I promise you hope and hard work, says that. Yeah, just not the same. Yeah.
It's a lot more work, a lot more sighing on his part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. And look, I think that's what we, as we always be careful to say, it's one of the things we enjoy about the story of Palpatine is his ability to adapt on the fly. Padme's always a fly in the ointment there, always doing things that he just doesn't account for. I think the rebellion does things he doesn't account for, and that's part of the fun of rooting against Palpatine. So I think there's some room to wonder if the Separatists had got some advantage, what would he have done? But I think trip mines were always in place to maybe make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Very fun to get into the frightening mind of Sheev Palpatine, Darth Sidious. We're going to move on to this bonus question. The bonus question is, do you think we might see Moss Gideon or Tarkin in Andor? If Gideon makes an appearance, I think it would be a good opportunity to show us how he was perceived by the higher brass of the Empire. Would he be feared and respected or mocked as a pompous zealot who thought himself far superior than he was? This is some great Gideon thoughts. Ken, let's just start with the main thrust of Brian's question here of if an appearance from Gideon or Tarkin in Andor is likely. How do you feel about that?
I think Gideon, I'm going to say very, very unlikely. But I do put a pin in this. I do want more Gideon, younger Gideon content, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Tarkin is possible in that second season, just the way it seems like they're going to approach it, racing towards Rogue One and jumping ahead on the timelines. Do they want to revisit that with the on the technology side? And maybe it's even better or easier. I don't know. I would be open to it. It's one of those things that just for Tarkin just kind of make sense in Andor, whether or not they want to use that piece. The galaxy is big. The rebellion right now is broken and wide and spread out. So you might not need Tarkin to tell part of that story. There's enough villains in that empire. But as you move closer, I kind of hope you see it, or at least get a reference, Tarkin Doctrine, Tarkin Towns, all those kind of things we kind of hear in Rebels. I think would have a place in Andor. Yeah, I love the, these are great Gideon thoughts, which is why I do want more Gideon content. A little bit more in his past. When did he kind of jump off? When did he think, yeah, the Empire, here's why they failed and here's what I can do better. I just don't know. Yeah, I just don't have, he could fit in it. Again, anyone from the Empire could fit into Andor, including Palpatine himself. Mm-hmm. I don't see the need. I guess I'll say that. I just don't see the need for him in Andor yet.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's possible that tiny, tiny speck, Pixel Palpatine was perhaps in the background of the Mon Mothma scene. We have hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I know Brian is not asking about Krennic, but I think Krennic is a possibility because I think Gilroy is interested in the characters that he had a hand in developing. I think Tarkin is a possibility, particularly the second season. I think it would be just kind of interesting on almost thematic level to see not even necessarily a one-on-one encounter, but Mothma has a mission, Tarkin has a mission, and we're following agents, you know, following these leaders. I think that it would be an interesting possibility. Given Rogue One, it does seem like the estate of Peter Cushing is okay with him being his image being used for the character. So I think that's a possibility. I do think there's a really low chance of Gideon myself, a very, very low chance. I think it's from a storytelling perspective. Yeah. He's around and functioning in the Empire, one would assume. Maybe not, but one would assume. So it does make some sense. This is just one of those ones for me where it just feels like the real world. There's too much parallel development going on in the creation of the Andor television series and the Mandalorian verse. Mm-hmm. And I think Tony Gilroy seems like a creator who's like, I really want to tell this story with these chess pieces that I have permission to move around the way I want to move around for my story. And I think, I've said it before, I think that Favreau really wants elbow room with the Mandalorian stories too. I think that's why the visual dictionaries got taken out of release. I think that's why a novel about Din Djarin's past got taken out of release. I think that Jon Favreau really wants that elbow room. So yeah. I don't even think it's like they're, I don't even mean it of like Tony Gilroy and Jon Favreau can't cooperate. I just feel like in the time frame that these were being made, they don't necessarily know the answers of who this character is and what he's doing. And the character is being developed at the exact same time by two different creators who are kind of building two different sections of the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Young Moff, young Gideon's first day on the job would be interesting. Yeah. Something else.
And who knows? Maybe this will be one of those really great times where in the future we get a question of like, what was something you were really wrong about? Maybe I will remember this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, the young Gideon, it's fascinating because we do know that he was in charge in some way of silencing the rebellion on Mandalore, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that he was higher up. He's a Moff, right? Was he a Moff or did he decide after the fact? No, they know him as Moff Gideon, right? From back in the day, that name rang out to Mandalorians. Mm-hmm. But how do you like the idea that he was feared and respected? Like, wow, like we've lost a lot of great leaders in Thrawn and Tarkin, but that Gideon, he's a keeper. Or were there people who just thought like, hey, have you noticed that Gideon guy is always like explaining like every blaster? He's always talking in a weird, threatening way. He's always monologuing. Are people like, oh, geez, I don't want to be in a meeting with Gideon.
I kind of like that. I like that because there's something about 5 years after the events of Return of the Jedi, 4 years or so from Jakku, that there's this guy who kind of is like, fine, I'll do it. I'll do it my way. And it's a little messy. And I got people that follow me. And it's definitely extreme. It's definitely on the fringe to where the Republic, the New Republic, is still maybe getting more information on it. And that no one's around that used to make fun of him or doubt him, question him. They're gone. Mm. And he wasn't good enough. Now, we don't know the details. We know the story. But he wasn't necessarily good enough to get the contingency plan invite to the Unknown Regions, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be incorrect. Maybe he turned it down. Maybe they lost in the mail. I don't know. But so the fact that he is maybe a little bit of a mess up, maybe they're too extreme, whatever, which it seems weird to say for the Empire. But you know what I mean? Like the fact that he's still here, he's left behind, and he has all this room to play. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah. Well, and that he's, yeah, Yeah, I love how murky it is of like how much his faction is connected with the cultists on Exegol. How much of that does he know? Is he aware that while he's around here, there's some other stuff going on in the unknown regions with other imperial factions? All that stuff is, I'm sure, will all become clear at some point. But yeah, I think when I really think about it, I think feared. But also maybe mocked for being, a pompous zealot, as Brian puts it. Because, I think, you meet some higher ups, like in the original trilogy, like Piet, right? Mm-hmm. I think Piet's a loyal officer, right? But this is the military. This is the Imperial Navy. And he has an officer. And there's this kind of etiquette at a dinner table. And he's got his retirement plan. And, he's doing his proper job. Vader's a little weird. It was scary to see the back of his head. That's not my business. I don't want to know about it.
Okay.
I am a proper officer. And I think Gideon's an obsessive true believer, right? Mm-hmm. Like Piet's not going into Mandalore and making real weird speeches about what is the meaning of their culture. What is the meaning of their defeat? Like Piet's just like, I had a job to do and I did it. What are you going on about, Gideon?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. You shut up.
Yeah. I would love now to see Gideon and Piet having lunch together.
I was thinking of episode 7 of season 2, The Believer, right? It have that with them. No firefight, but just have Piet be like, what are you rambling on about, sir?
Yes. Did you just explain the meaning of the food we're eating to me? All right.
I know it's an E-Web blaster. I know that.
Great question and great bonus question. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, wonderful stuff. Love the big what ifs. A lot of fun.
Yep. So thank you to everyone for the questions. Brian, Social, Yuval, and Phyllis, thank you as always for the great questions. I had recently put out a new call on Twitter. It's pinned to the top of our Twitter page. And I recently refreshed our request for questions on Patreon as well. Lots of great questions coming in that we'll be getting to in the coming weeks. Thank you all. And if you haven't asked a question yet and you want to, that's where you can find them. I also recently refreshed our call for a Power of the Light Side entries. I'll be checking soon. And if we have any of those submissions from our patrons on Patreon, just sharing something that you love about Star Wars, a happy moment of Star Wars, something to fuel the light side, we'd be happy to share those as well. But that is it. Ken, where can people find us?
You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Join us there for live Q&As and more. Podcasts available on a lot of different spots, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. We do have some merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kednapsock.com, for information. Other things I do, I have got a comedy gig coming up in Seattle on the 28th, and I'll be appearing in my hometown, a part of the Central Coast Film Society's big event this year, kind of an all-day con, if you will, but speeches, panels, those kind of things, more information coming, but I will be up there in my hometown, maybe for more Twin Suns moments as I go up there. So more information on my website. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, with links to all the other stuff I'm doing. As I've been talking about the last few weeks, I am being more active on YouTube. So if you want to check out, subscribe, watch some comedy videos of all kinds, you can just go to YouTube and Google Joseph Scrimshaw. And if you want to learn a little bit more about some of the new adventures I'm embarking on, I kind of widened my Patreon from being just a support of my podcast Obsessed to supporting a lot of the other things I do. So if you're at all interested in that, you can check it out at patreon.com/Joseph Scrimshaw. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for whatever Moff Gideon's binary sunset moment is, this has been Cues of the Force.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.